Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 13, Indra afflicted by sinful reactions, text number 11. Kayendra samsahat tapam niritir namum avishat remantam vach yatam papraptam sukhayant yapi no gunaha. Kaya, by that action, Indra, King Indra, Sma, indeed, Asahat, suffered, Tapam, misery, Nirriti, happiness, Na, not, Amum, him, Avishat, entered, Rimantam, one who is shameful, Vachitam, ill fame, Praptam, obtaining, Sukhayanti, give pleasure, Api, although, Na, not, guna, good qualities like possessing opulence. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Following the advice of the demigods, Indra killed Vritrasura, and he suffered because of this sinful killing. Although the other demigods were happy, he could not derive happiness from the killing of Vritrasura. Indra's other good qualities, such as tolerance and opulence, could not help him in his grief. Purport. One cannot be happy by committing sinful acts, even if one is endowed with material opulence. Indra found this to be true. People began to blaspheme him, saying, "This person has killed a brahmana for the sake of enjoying heavenly material happiness." Therefore, in spite of being king of heaven and enjoying material opulence, Indra was always unhappy because of the accusations of the populace. I'm just going to read the rest of the chapter because it's just, there's no purports. Indra saw a personified sinful reaction chasing him, appearing like a chandala woman, a woman of the lowest class. She seemed very old, and all the limbs of her body trembled. Because she was afflicted with tuberculosis, her body and garments were covered with blood. Breathing an unbearable fishy odor that polluted the entire street, she called to Indra, "Wait, wait." Purport. When a person is afflicted with tuberculosis, he often vomits blood, which makes his garments bloody. O king, Indra first fled to the sky, but there also he saw the woman personified sin chasing him. This witch followed him wherever he went. At last, he very quickly went to the northeast and entered the Manasa Sarovara Lake. Always thinking of how he could be relieved from the sinful reactions for killing a brahmana, Indra, invisible to everyone, lived in the lake for 1,000 years in the subtle fibers of the stem of a lotus. The fire god used to bring him his share of all yajnas, but because the fire god was afraid to enter the water, Indra was practically starving. As long as King Indra lived in the water, wrapped in the stem of the lotus, Nahusha was equipped with the ability to rule the heavenly kingdom, due to his knowledge, austerity, and mystic power. Nahusha, however, blinded and maddened by power and opulence, made undesirable proposals to Indra's wife with a desire to enjoy her. Thus, Nahusha was cursed by a brahmana and later became a snake. Indra's sins were diminished by the influence of Rudra, the demigod of all directions. Because Indra was protected by the goddess of fortune, Lord Vishnu's wife, who resides in the lotus clusters of Manasasarovara Lake, Indra's sins could not affect him. Indra was ultimately relieved of all the reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu. Then he was called back to the heavenly planets by the Brahmanas and reinstated in his position. O King, when King Indra reached the heavenly planets, the saintly Brahmanas approached him and promptly initiated him into a horse sacrifice, Ashvamedha Yajna, meant to please the Supreme Lord. The horse sacrifice performed by the saintly Brahmanas relieved Indra of all the reactions of all his sins because he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that sacrifice. O King, although he had committed a gravely sinful act, it was nullified at once by that sacrifice, just as fog is vanquished by the brilliant sunrise. Indra was favored by Marichi and other great sages. They performed the sacrifice just according to the rules and regulations, worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, the original person. Thus Indra regained his exalted position and was again honored by everyone. In this very great narrative, there is a glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. There are statements about the exaltedness of devotional service. There are descriptions of devotees like Indra and Vritrasura, and there are statements about King Indra's release from sinful life and about his victory in fighting the demons. By understanding this incident, one is relieved of all sinful reactions. Therefore, the learned are always advised to read this narration. If one does so, one will become expert in the activities of the senses. His opulences will increase, and his reputation will become widespread. One will also be relieved of all sinful reactions. He will conquer his enemies, and the duration of his life will increase. Because this narration is auspicious in all respects, learned scholars regularly hear and repeat it on every festival day. King Parikshit inquired from Shukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, demons are generally sinful, being obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance. How then could Vritrasura have attained such exalted love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan? Purport, in this material world, everyone is obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance. However, unless one conquers these modes, comes to the platform of goodness, there is no chance of becoming a pure devotee. This is confirmed by Lord Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. Yesham tvantikatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvanva mohanir mukta vajante mam dhrita vrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, whose sinful actions are completely eradicated and are freed from the dualities of delusion, engage themselves in my service with determination. Since Vritrasura was among the demons, Maharaj Parikshit wondered how it was possible for him to become such an exalted devotee. We find that Indra wasn't happy because he was afflicted by sinful reactions, although he had all material opulence. So that's the difference between modern society and Vedic society. In modern society, people believe that if they acquire material opulence, they'll be happy, no matter how they do it. They're not interested in conquering sinful reactions. They're interested in conquering and obtaining material opulence. As I said before, in the Bible, there's something called the golden rule, that the golden rule is supposed to be, do unto others as they do unto you. To learn to love thy Lord, thy God, with all thy heart, with all thy might, with all thy soul. And like unto this, learn to love thy neighbor as thyself. Or do unto others as they would do unto you. Which is similar to our philosophy. Prachanaka Pandit, Pashanapi, that matrivat paradareshu paradvareshu lostravat atmavat sarabhuteshu yakpashiti sapanditaha, that a learned person, namely a Brahmin, he sees every woman except for his wife to be just like his mother. He sees everyone else's property to be like garbage in the street. And he sees everyone to be like his own self. So this is a learned person. Now, one who thinks that every woman, including my wife, including my mother, and so, is just like my wife, that everyone else's property should be my property, and that everyone should surrender to me and serve me, then this is the demoniac quality, being impelled by lust. In other words, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone actually has a duty to perform. It's not that we've come to the material world and we're just free to do whatever we like here. It's just one big enjoyment park. But actually, everyone, as soon as they get a material body and the human form of life, they have obligations. They have duties to perform. And if they don't do the duty, why is it? Is it just free will? I just free to do whatever I want? Or do they say, you know, I have to follow my nature. I have to do what I feel like. Otherwise, it's artificial. Actually, the material world is artificial. The real world is the spiritual world. And the material world is the artificial world. And if we don't follow our duty, it's because, and Arjuna asks, why don't people follow their duty, do what they're supposed to do, even though they know what they're supposed to do? What to speak of if they don't know what they're supposed to do? So Krishna just says, Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajaguna, Samudvavaha, Mahashino, Mahapapma, Vidinam, Ihavarinam. That is lust only, Arjuna, born of the mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. And instead of taking lust as their enemy, people take lust as their friend. They take it as their inspiration. If they're really lusty to get something, they take it as being inspired. And they write books about how to become inspired, how to become more and more lusty. For what? To gain material things and become greedy. It's not that I'm a billionaire and I'm satisfied. No, I want to become a multi-billionaire. I become more and more greedy. And I become angry if there's at any impediment. Modern society, we can see, they're demanding that everyone, every powerful nation is demanding that other nations just hand over all their possessions. And if they don't do that, then the mighty nation becomes angry and thinks of some justification for stealing whatever the other nation has. So this is called greed. And greed is never satisfied, and eventually it turns into anger and frustration, and all of them just fuel delusion, this false bodily concept of life. Although people think they're making progress, they're gaining something, but all they're gaining is illusion. Queen Kundi said, Janmaishvarya Shute Shibir Edamanak Mudakpuman Naivahat Yavidatum Vai Twam Akinchana Gochara. Then the conditioned soul is already in illusion, thinking oneself to be the material body. But on top of that illusion or delusion, we add more and more desires for material opulence, material wealth, personal influence and beauty, material education, material prestige. Then the result is that instead of just being intoxicated by material identification, we become mad, crazy. And a mad, crazy person will do anything. And what is impelling and inspiring people? It's not love, people who talk about love, but it's lust. Being covered by lust, then one is impelled by lust, and lust is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. It puts one into anxiety, bewilderment, confusion, moroseness, and people think that this is going to be progress. Therefore, the Vedic culture is to regulate the material desires. That's called religion. Regulate illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication. Now, without regulating these things, one is simply an animal. If there's not even a desire to regulate sinful activities, because anything outside of Krishna consciousness is actually sinful, but still there are certain pillars of sinful activity. Now, if one can practice the principles of religious life, that is, refrain from illicit sex, gambling, meat-eating, intoxication, then one can perform pious activities. One can become austere, perform activities that will make one austere, truthful, clean, and merciful. And one will get the benefit of that. Clean water, fresh air, nice relation with people, nice food, nice existence, comfortable material existence. But there is something beyond that. That is to become inquisitive. What is the actual purpose of life? If we're actually spiritual souls, then the idea is not just to live in the material world free from suffering or in a comfortable position. The idea is ultimately liberation. So one becomes inquisitive. What is the process of liberation from my material conceptions of life? And when one hears from the learned personalities, one can come to the platform of knowledge of one's eternal identity and no longer become bewildered by material circumstances. One can tolerate material circumstances and keep on with the actual goal of life, namely to fix the consciousness upon Krishna without deviation. Then one can actually come to the platform, the spiritual platform of existence, and understand what is one's actual purpose of existence. Now, of course, for the devotees, the neophyte devotees who are absorbed in trying to conquer sin, at least follow religious principles, act piously, develop some inquisitiveness, some desire to obtain transcendental existence, that these things by themselves are not sufficient, especially in Kali Yuga, to save one from material existence. That one has to take up the Sankirtan movement. Because in this age there is no varna and ashram that can be put into, and because no one knows what their duty is. Everyone was born as a Shudra, and as Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, by modern education, we became less than animals. So animals, they have no duty. They think their duty is to eat and sleep and mate and defend. They think that is the purpose of life. Therefore, Śrīla Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has established the Sankirtan movement, and our duty is to serve the Sankirtan movement according to our capacity. Some may serve as a variety of capacities, but the main capacities are try to tell others about Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Deka Tarikaha, Krishna Upadesh Amara Aiga Guruhana Taridesh. Whoever we meet, we should tell them about Krishna. And if we can't remember that, then at least we should try to organize those who can tell, try to organize the Sankirtan movement so that others can tell people about Krishna. And if we do that, then we'll become inspired eventually to tell others about Krishna too. If we serve those who are telling others about Krishna, we'll become inspired to tell others about Krishna also. And if we don't even have the capacity to organize the Sankirtan movement, or even organize our own lives to engage in the Sankirtan movement, then at least we should give some proportion of our material things, our material opulence, in the service of the Sankirtan movement. That will inspire us to come to the platform of learning how to organize the Sankirtan movement and eventually telling everyone we meet about Krishna. That's the idea of book distribution. It's an opportunity to whoever we meet when we're distributing books to give them something which will tell them about Krishna. It's practice. But it doesn't mean when we come back to the temple that we no longer have to tell the devotees about Krishna, because they know everything about Krishna. No, we're practicing distributing Krishna consciousness to others so that we can distribute Krishna consciousness amongst ourselves. Without distributing Krishna consciousness amongst ourselves, then practicing Krishna consciousness, then the inspiration to distribute Krishna consciousness to others will also diminish. Therefore, although we may not be on the platform of having completely given up sinful activities, or what to speak of completely accepted pious life, or even becoming intensely curious to realize our spiritual existence, or even practicing pure spiritual life, giving up all other considerations, but just striving for knowledge, realization of what is Krishna consciousness, even if we're not on that platform, still we can act for the Sankirtan movement, serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And what is that service? Try to come to the temple, try to go on the street, simply for the pleasure of Krishna. And try to cooperate, make friends with the devotees. Don't see the devotees as one's competitors, that I somehow or another have to become the supreme devotee. That see the devotees as an opportunity to make friendship, cooperation for the Sankirtan movement, both in the temple and outside the temple. And at the same time, see that we're supposed to help the innocent. Innocent means anyone who knows less about Krishna consciousness than me is potentially in the category of the innocent. And those things would draw our minds away from Krishna, we try to become indifferent to them, not allured and attracted to try to associate with those things. So if we act in that way, then gradually we'll be elevated from the platform of ignorance to passion to goodness, and then we'll be steadily situated in the Madhyam Adhikari platform. If we act on the Madhyam platform, then we'll become gradually situated on the Madhyam platform. There's no purpose of lamenting or hankering or trying to figure out some method of elevation in this age outside of the Sankirtan movement. If we try to elevate ourselves from the so-called Varna and Ashram, it'll simply be a failure. We'll go to some farm and just think of some, meditate not on Krishna, we'll meditate upon what city life is like. Who won the football game? Did I miss some movie I missed? Instead of meditating on Krishna on the farm, because our minds are too agitated, we'll think of all kinds of other things. But if one has energy, one has the ability, then one has the opportunity, then one should engage in the Sankirtan movement. On either Harinam or book distribution, or organizing the Sankirtan movement, or somehow or another, engaging one's energy in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, And that way one will gradually become elevated. Then it will become easier to give up this idea that we can enjoy the material world. We'll understand the value of becoming austere and clean and truthful and merciful. We'll understand what it means to be inquisitive. When it's time, when we have some time, rather than trying to figure out what's going on in the world, we'll actually try to find out what is the science of Krishna consciousness by reading Prabhupada's books. We won't waste so much time trying to figure out what's going to satisfy my mind. We'll utilize our time, what will actually give me spiritual intelligence. And then we'll actually realize that we are Krishna's servants and we'll actually engage fully in Krishna's service without any hesitation or deviation. So Krishna says, Te sham jnani nitya yukta eka bhakti vishishate priyohi jnani no yartam aham sacha mamai priha. So from that position of knowledge, spiritual knowledge, realization of our eternal selves, at least the fact that we are eternal, realization not just theoretically, but practically, then we'll come to the platform of Nishta, and there won't be any more impediments for our steadily engaging Krishna service and ultimately becoming to the higher levels of Krishna consciousness. But unless we take to the process that will bring us to the process, we'll never come to the perfection of the process, nor will we make any real substantial progress. And if we don't make progress, then we'll become discouraged and go back to try to enjoy material energy. So it's not like one of the many options to engage in the Sankirtan movement. Without it, there is the only other option is material existence, going back again and trying to see if there's some happiness in material existence. We don't find the happiness in spiritual existence. So King Indra, he thought, let me get some material opulence and I'll become happy. But because he acted sinfully, therefore, being impelled by lust, simply what he got was more lust. Although he could check it with his intelligence and understood it was a bad decision, still he couldn't stop the lust from having its effect upon him. And therefore, if we act according to ignorance, the result will be the seed of material desire. And the seed of material desire will produce parabdha and aparabdha karma, which will reduce the tendency for sinful reaction, which will be embedded in our hearts. But, of course, we find that after a long time, Indra became purified of the reaction by properly following the advice of the Brahmins, taking shelter of Krishna, etc., etc. It wasn't easy to get free from this sin of killing a great devotee such as Vritrasura. Not only a Brahmin, but a great devotee. But after a long, long time, he was able to come back to his original position again. So we should be very careful about what we're doing, not thinking that because I'm a devotee, yasya balad papam buddhi, that committing sin on the strength of chanting, that because I'm a devotee, I can do whatever I like, and somehow or another, by execution of devotional service, that I'll get free from the sinful reactions. Now, Krishna, if he sees that mentality, he'll make it very difficult for us to get free from those sinful reactions. And on the other hand, if we sincerely conquer sin, try to conquer and engage ourselves as fully as possible in Krishna's service, then gradually Krishna will give us the intelligence by which we can make more and more progress. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? So the general Prabhupada writes in this verse, Yesham antikatam papam janam punya karmanam, that those who are sinful, those who are foolish, those who are atheistic, and those who are deceitful, they don't accept devotional service. So who are the foolish? Those are the shudras, those in the mode of ignorance. Who are the atheist, well, it's foolish, deceitful, sinful. Who are the sinful? Those are the Naradamas. Those who have been raised to the platform of civilized life, but still have sinful desires. They want to, they look like they're human beings, but they're also simply interested in animal life. And they look like human beings, but their only interest is animal life. Prabhupada, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura called these the Kali Chelas. They have the Kunti Mala and their Japa beads, and they're simply looking around to see if they can enjoy someone else's wife. These are called the Kali Chelas. So that tendency is there for the Naradamas, and then those who rise up to the platform of the jignasu, inquisitiveness, they can also become Maya Priti Jnanas. They could also utilize that inquisitiveness for word jugglery, for so-called cultivation of knowledge, which is all based upon deceit. So these are the people who are deceitful. They claim they know something, but actually they don't know anything. They're cheaters. The professors at the universities, as Prabhupada mentions, one professor came to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, "I'm a professor of Hindology, Hinduism. Can you tell me what Hinduism means?" And then Prabhupada turns to Shroop Damodar and asks him, "He's a professor of Hinduism, and he's asking me what Hinduism means. So what do you call such a person?" And without hesitation, Shroop Damodar said, "He's a cheater, Prabhupada. He's a cheater." They claim they know something, but they don't even know who they are. And if one can surpass that, actually become inquisitive, gain real knowledge, then one may become a atheist, thinking that I'm God, that there's no one higher than me. I know everything. So that pride, we can see sometimes is within us. We already know everything. So it's not like it suddenly appears out of nowhere. It's already there. If we're on a lower platform, it means we probably have the impediments of the higher platform. It's just that we don't realize it. We're walking around as if we're the Lord, and at the same time we're thinking we're pious and humble. It's only when one actually becomes purified of the lower qualities that one can actually understand the impediments that one has on the higher qualities. So one should try to be humble and engage humbly in the Sankirtan movement with patience, and then gradually become purified, and then not to be surprised if somehow or another we start realizing things that are within us that we didn't even know existed. I thought I was so humble and pious and sincere and intelligent, and now I find out that actually I'm actually trying to take Krishna's place. But we can only actually realize that when we actually come to a higher platform and these other lower petty things go away. Then we can actually understand, even on the higher platforms, that we have impediments to take care of. As Brahmananda Prabhu said, he was sitting in class in the early days, in 66, and Prabhupada was always talking about the Mayavadis, criticizing the Mayavadis. So Brahmananda thought, well, maybe Prabhupada had some fight with the Mayavadis in India, and it was so severe that even he came to the West, he couldn't forget about it. And therefore, he was always talking about the Mayavadis. And then one day, he was sitting in class, and Brahmananda realized who the Mayavadis were. It was all the people sitting in the class. So these tendencies are there, but if we engage in the Sankirtan movement humbly, with sincerity and determination, then gradually these things will be uncovered, and when we become aware of them, then we have an opportunity to give them up. If we don't know what's in our consciousness, then it's impossible to give them up. They have to be illuminated first, these subtle and gross tendencies, and then we can have a determination to give them up. So you can become tired of them or frustrated with them or determined to give them up. Then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do it.
Yeah, I just remember I was reading that story in the book of Shachinanda Swami, Gayatri Mantras, about the Brahmana who was chanting Gayatri Mantras, and this chanting brought him to Vrindavan. And whenever he would see the devotees chanting and taking part in Harinam Sankirtana, chanting the holy names, he would be skeptical and he would not like it. He would go away. But he would continue chanting the Gayatri Mantra, and it brought him to Vrindavan. And then there in Vrindavan he met Gop Kumar. And he asked some instructions from Gop Kumar, and Gop Kumar told him that you should join the Harinam Sankirtan. You already done nice, but you have to, this is this most important and this is essential for, as you said, Maharaj, deliverance, that it's not enough to follow four regulative principles. We have to take up to the Sankirtana, Harinam Sankirtana.
Yeah, that's the way of serving Radha and Krishna in this age. If we don't serve Radha and Krishna, I don't think we're going to expect to meet Radha and Krishna. If we don't like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, then we'll have to wait around for Satya Yuga. And see if we can take up Krishna consciousness in Satya Yuga. Another 427,000 years we'll have to wait. So if you're patient, you can do that. Because in between, there'll be little people running around trying to eat you, which would be rather unpleasant. Anything else?
Yes, Hare Krishna. So I wanted to go back to the point when you said at the beginning of devotional service, we think we are pure devotees, but then some illumination comes and we see that we are full of anartas, some inclinations which are more or less quite demoniac. And you said that we need to give it up. And I guess the process of Sankirtan is the process to give it up. And maybe you can just recommend what would be the fastest possible way to give up our anartas and demoniac inclinations.
That is offenseless chanting of the holy name and service of the holy name in the Sankirtan movement. He goes, Adao, Shara, Tata, Sarasanga, Tya, Bhajna, Kriya. In the beginning, there's a little taste, a little favor, a little inclination coming to the temple, hearing the programs and hearing about Krishna from the devotees. Then we take up Anishtata, Bhajna, Kriya. Of the first one is Utsahamayi. We're puffed up with enthusiasm. So generally, when we're puffed up with enthusiasm, we think that I'm a pure devotee. Because Krishna gives us some mercy at the beginning to inspire us, we think, well, it's just a couple of weeks and I'll be there with Krishna. And then there's a gradual process of progress, and mostly it's uncovering our reasons why we're unsteady in our bhajan. Could we turn that off? That, as in Madhurya Kandambini explains, there's a gradual progress from Gana to Rala. Sometimes we're enthusiastic, sometimes we're depressed. Sometimes we're attracted to the objects of sense gratification. Sometimes we try to renounce them, become more attached to them. Sometimes we're trying to steady our devotional bhajan, and we fail, and then sometimes we actually become steady in our bhajan, but we become attached to the fruits of the bhajan. The offerings made are the result of the bhajan. And so we have to overcome all of that, then we can really work on getting free from all the offenses against chanting the holy name, which will actually bring us to the platform of liberation, of nishtha, where we'll be steady engaged in the Sankirtan movement. So we engage in the Sankirtan movement, and then we should be aware of my, if I'm puffed up, if I'm attracted to the objects of senses, if I'm trying to renounce things that I'm and becoming more attached to them, if I can't regulate my devotional bhajan, my devotional service, so that I'm engaged consistently in devotional service, and if I'm finding myself attracted to the fruits of the of bhajan, then these are things that will be, we have to give up and just concentrate on just chanting offenselessly. So offensive chanting means, generally speaking, that these other qualities, this is what I actually am meditating on when I'm chanting. These are the impediments for my offenseless chanting. So it's not that we give up the chanting, that we have to become conscious of what we actually have to give up and what we have to engage in. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.